This is David Corus, co-chair of the committee. I'm going to call the meeting to order at 10:03. Start with roll call in no particular order. John Flores.
Present.
John Johnson.
Here.
Tom Patton.
Here.
Paul Hinch.
Here.
Parker Wise. And Don Frost. Okay, with five members of the committee present, that's a quorum. Next item on the agenda is public comment. Andrew, is there anyone on the line for public comment?
Next item is the approval of minutes, just as a heads up.
Oh, sorry. I don't have the agenda right in front of me. I'm sorry. Next item is approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from last month's Finance Committee meeting?
So moved, David.
Okay, moved by John, second by Tom. Any discussion or necessary changes?
This is John Flores. I think on old business we should just add none because it doesn't have any reference.
Yep. Andrew, you can make that change, I presume?
Yep, will do.
Okay, any other discussion or changes? Okay, all those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, next item, public comment. Is there anyone on the line, Andrew, who wishes to speak at this time on today's agenda?
Yeah, any members of the public who wish to speak, please press *6 to unmute your line. Again, that's *6 to unmute your line.
Kevin Blacker, I'd like to speak.
Yep, go right ahead, Mr. Blacker. Please make comments on today's agenda.
So under new business, I hope that there will be some discussion. You guys mentioned at the last Finance Committee meeting that the budget's going to be real tight, that there's not going to be much wiggle room at all, and that you're dependent on this lease income, which isn't guaranteed. So wondering how you guys intend, or if you intend to, aid in the planning of the Upper Thames as it relates to, the developments at Montville and Gales Ferry. There's been a number of meetings, not sure, whether you guys are going to have adequate finances to be able to aid in the planning of that. So wanted to see if there would be any discussion about that. Also was hoping that there would be an update or discussion on the financial, I know you guys talked last meeting about breaking down the legal expenses or giving some type of a breakdown to the public about the legal expenses that were, as you said, maybe within your control or outside of your control. So whether you guys have gone ahead and done that, whether, there's the public is going to be made aware, of say how much money is being spent on the Attorney General's investigation, whether the ethics, we all read about the $10,000 ethics fine levied against the consultant. One would have to believe that there will be similar actions against the employees, one of whom is still employed by the Port Authority. So whether there are legal expenses being incurred, due to an Office of State Ethics investigation, if you guys could touch on that during new business or some appropriate time in the agenda, I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comments at this time? A reminder, it's *6 to take yourself off mute. Okay, hearing none, we'll move on to our next agenda item, which is a financial update. Ortiz and Veronica. I'll hand it over to you both.
I stopped up there and I told you to come down to field and mow on 3.5 and 4. I told you what to do, so just do it.
Andrew, can you re-mute the public lines?
So just a reminder, members of the committee, please press star 6 to unmute your lines.
Okay, thanks, Andrew. Hopefully
yep.
I'm audible. And so for financial update,
yes.
Ulysses and Veronica, hand it over to you two. And reminder that it's star 6.
This is Veronica. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Ulysses is on the line also. I don't know if he wanted me to start or if he wants to finish up. So I'll start, and then I'll turn it over to Ulysses if there's anything he would like to add. I do apologize for the size of the data that's presented to you in the report from QuickBooks, but there is a lot of information that I wanted to share. This report that you are looking at, the first one is general operations, budget versus actual, and it's as of June 30th, 2022, and I do have the reports marked as draft. We're not done finishing out fiscal year 2022 yet. We're still getting invoices in. We're still posting. We're trying to finish up June's bank reconciliations as fast as we can. But I did want to capture for you where our numbers are in a draft form. I don't see any problems. The revenue is on track. We did receive the $1,250,000 from NEO for revenue, which helps a great deal. We do have the accounts separated for the pilot commission versus the pilot safety and training. So that's underway. So when we start fiscal year 2023, which was July 1st, we're good to go there. On the expenses side, there's really no surprises. Payroll is coming in at where we anticipated. In the contractual services area, I tried to capture out in the remarks so that, you all probably remember this from briefings gone by, but I figured for all of us, the remarks helps a lot as far as maybe questions that popped up in the past that a quick, word or two can trigger our memories. I am expecting when we start fiscal year 2023 that the NOAA agreement is in place. And if you recall, when I built the 2023 budget, I did take that into consideration. Our audit for 2022, the kickoff meeting for me is next Tuesday, July 26th, but the auditor has been asking me for documents, which I've been able to produce and upload to their share file. Right now we're working on bank account confirmations, and that's normally the start of the audit. But I anticipate there'll be many, many more other requests for information as the weeks go on. But Lori and I are prepared to try and answer their questions and provide documents to them as best as we can. other things in the contractual services area. The only thing here is on the legal services, that estimated amount of $225,224 for as of 30 June is a combination of both internal and external legal fees. And as I do have a separate report further back in your handout about the internal and external fees. So that's a huge number. Ulysses and I have talked with Andrew and also Joe, and Ulysses is working on keeping those legal services fees to a minimum for internal CPA daily operations. And as he'll cover, the external legal fees, we basically don't have any control over, but I'll let him get into that. On the legal permitting, I do not have a number plugged in there yet as far as where we're going to finish in fiscal year 2022 for account 61601. Because that is a combination of fees or costs from Robinson and Cole that have to do with permitting. And I'm still trying to sort out whether those expenses were rightly charged to core funding for the infrastructure for the New London State Pier versus general operations funding. Right,
Veronica,
now it looks like, yes.
Veronica, hi, this is John Flores. Just like, so are you clear then that the $225,000 doesn't cover any other legal permitting that we already spent?
Yes, that's correct. It's about $77,000 that was entered into QuickBooks as legal permitting under 51601. That I have to sort out to see if part of that was under general operations, which would be account 51600, or part of it would be under the core infrastructure account, because I believe we should not be charging or should not have charged permitting to the HDA Webster escrow project funding. So, like I said, that's something, what you may find is that when we finish the fiscal year, you may find that the 225 would be 225 plus 77 would really be in the ballpark of 302, but I don't know that yet.
I doubt, this is David, I doubt that that would be the outcome. I mean, I think as Veronica explains, we're still sorting through kind of the permitting chargeback, but it would be in one of the capital accounts since it's associated with the project. So I don't think that the operating legal expense would go up by that magnitude, but making sure that it's in the right capital account.
Right.
Is essential.
And which I may find that I have to do some adjustments depending. I have to really get into the invoices and really sort it out and figure out what the correct account was that it should have been charged to. Maybe it is charged to the right one. I just don't know yet. For marketing and business, not much going on there. I mean, we do have some advertising costs, which are within the revised budget amount, and that looks good. The dues and memberships, you know, year to year, that probably will come in, you know, anywhere between $13,000 and $15,000 if we keep our memberships with the same organizations that we have now. There is a small amount of reimbursement for travel and training for the CPA employees. Let's see, travel and training. the member board travel, that would be Mr. Corris, office supplies, the rent and utilities. I know Mr. Johnson had asked me last month about the rent for the old Saybrook office. We are up to date on that, and what you see there under office rent, under account 52400, is strictly the rent for the old Saybrook office. We do pay $2,850 a month, which includes rent and utilities. The lessor did give us a break for a few months in the beginning of the year for we signed a new lease, and then there was some renovations done. So I think we got a for 4 months of the year, we paid what we paid last year, and then the new rent kicked in. So it turned out to be at 91% that we paid in 2022. In 2023, it will be $2,850 a month. We're locked into that number. But we're up to date on that. The other, the Eversource bill, the new London State Pier, hopefully all of that will go away when the construction's done and Gateway takes over. And then the insurance liability, that number there, $62,021, represents both general operations and the State Pier marine liability. And Ulysses has been working with our insurance broker, which is Gowrie and Chubb, to really get a handle on exactly the portion of the liability insurance that belongs under the marine general liability that is strictly for the New London State Pier, and then, of course, what general liability is for the CPA office there in Old Saybrook. The broker basically told me that he did a quick analysis, and the breakout looks about 11% would be general operations and 89% would be the New London State Pier Marine General Liability Policy. So along those lines, that $62,021, the breakout is around $6,800 went for general operations, and around $55,000 of that $62,000 is for the New London State Pier marine liability policy. We have to cover the insurance down at the State Pier until the construction is done, and Ulysses has been working with DAS and OPM on what that breakout is for the marine liability, because it's pretty expensive. And we did get approval from OPM, DAS. They ran it by the legal office at the state, and we can use core project money to pay for that State Pier marine liability portion, which could be in the area of $200,000 for the the insurance company runs on a calendar year basis. But anyway, bottom line is it looks like instead of having to use general operations money to pay for that huge marine liability cost, we're going to be able to use a bond core project money to do that. And I do have that in writing from OPM. I will let Ulysses talk about the 2018 Ford Explorer and the insurance if he wants to.
Sure.
The other bottom. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. I'll.
Oh, all right.
I'll wait.
Sure. All right. Okay, so at the bottom line for general operations, we're in the black, $380,364, which is good. If it turns out to be that number, then we get to carry it over into fiscal year 2023. But remember, these numbers for June 30th are not final. And then I'm still, like I said, processing documents and still trying to make some adjustments where they need to be made. So before we move on, do you have any questions for me on general operations? Okay. The next report I gave you, I did give this to you last month. There were a couple suggestions by the committee and also the board members since last month was the first time that they saw a bond ship project budget report listing all of the projects that are in core as far as the core balance, the funding, and also the balance in Essex. And what we've done is, with the help of Andrew and Joe, we went through the list again. And remember, this is a working list. This is one of those things where it was like a 19 or 20 column spreadsheet. I'm still trying to interpret it. So we took our first crack at it, and Joe and Andrew were able to identify the project type, whether this funding that's sitting in core is old legacy DOT systems, whether it's ship round one, ship round two. So by breaking it out that way, it really does kind of put a perspective on things that were there in the past and how we're going to move forward. Now, how we're going to move forward, I'm going to use an example of project ID that ends in 12, CPA 50130012, and it has to do with the Chester Creek dredging, where the core balance is $100,000, so the project balance is $100,000, and that is in the ship round two. And I have entered that into QuickBooks now, because in the past, none of these bond ship dollars were in QuickBooks. So my purpose, my aim is to mirror what's in core with QuickBooks. So Chester Dredging is a good example. It's in core. It's in QuickBooks. There's $100,000 available. The town of Chester recently submitted their invoices, and they're ready to be reimbursed for the work that they had done in Chester. So we are working through core to establish a contract, to establish a purchase order, and then to establish a voucher that actually will pay the town of Chester through CORE by the that will be processed, and the town of Chester will actually be paid by the state comptroller's office. So it, you know, all of this, we're moving towards, you know, electronic payment. Eventually it'll make things a lot easier. And we won't have to write checks in this particular case. It'll go directly into an account that the town of Chester has identified. So we are moving in the right direction. There is a lot of work to be done and a lot of understanding on my part in order to keep this all straight with the help of Joe and with Andrew and, of course, Ulysses. And as you can see, below the Chester dredging project, I have gotten a lot of the ship round two projects into QuickBooks. So, and there has been purchase orders in the system. We're making progress. And that's all I'll say. Is there any questions that you have about the bond ship budget report?
Yeah, Veronica, this is Tom Patton. So how do I read the line that ends in 01, State Pier Economic Development Strategy?
So that's a good example where research is needed on my part. The core balance that is sitting there available is $351,761. And they're saying that the project balance is $351,761, but they're saying that there was $171,000 that was spent in that project that came out of the Essex bank account. Now, what I have to do is I have to go back to OPM and try and understand why that's a negative number. Because right now, what they're giving me, I just haven't, it doesn't add up to me. So I need to know if there's a negative number there, is that something that I need to subtract from the core balance number of 351? I don't think so, because I have a feeling that even though the core balance is at 351, there was more allotted, if you will, for this particular project ID. So that is something I have to work on.
Thank you.
In the same way with the piping plover management.
Veronica, I have another question for you.
Yeah.
On the town of Old Lyme, there's $77,000 in the core balance. And I think that that was a carryover from the previous project. Is that right, the unexpended funds?
I have no way of knowing that. I'd have to try and go back and research it. And if the project, if it's done, I would think if it was done, it's my understanding you just can't transfer it to another project, if you will. Money has to go back up into the state coffers and then reissued.
That's my understanding also.
I don't know if that's a fact.
But what does the legacy DOT mean?
Mean that the appropriation, the allotment, went to the Department of Transportation. And this was before the CPA was established. See, a lot of those legacy systems were DOT projects that were started way back when. And like I said, I'm thinking that money, let's say for the time of Old Lyme, if that project is done, I would think that money would get swept back up into the state coffers. That's the only word I can think of right now, to be reissued if needed elsewhere, or maybe even Old Lyme still has some work that needs to be done. But I don't think that money is available to the CPA to move somewhere else. But I could be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, and some of these, Veronica, exactly to your point, some of these we have already conveyed to the General Assembly and the administration that they are excess funds for projects that are completed or are not going forward. And so, you know, the other piece of this is understanding exactly to your point about sort of rolling it back up to the state. Some of it we have already indicated to the state that it should be rolled back up, and we need to understand from them sort of where the process is on that and when it'll go away. And I think the other piece for our own accounting is once these are in QuickBooks, you know, how do we code money that was given back to the state essentially and the project was retired.
Mm-hmm. Right. So as you can see, there's a lot of work to be done, a lot of research in order to make it right. I have to admit, you know, last year at this time when I was here with the CPA, we did not have a report that looked anything like this. This is a step in the right direction as far as breaking things out in core by project ID, because it's difficult. It's difficult when, you know, money was appropriated and allotted, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, and then, you know, us trying to backtrack and find the documents that started it and what took place in the meantime and how we close it out successfully.
Veronica, does the column purchase order, if there's a number there, does that mean the project's closed out?
No. What it means is that it is in core as a contract and then as a purchase order. In other words,
the money's encumbered.
It's encumbered, right. And And at this point, since we have a purchase order, we're waiting on invoices that can be entered into CORE to either pay a vendor directly or to reimburse if it has to be, have to do with a town or a city. So, in other words, it's in the pipeline, a contract is in there, the money's available, the purchase order's there, we're waiting for invoices so we can do a voucher to get it paid and get the project closed. That's it, done.
Great report.
Yes. And Mr. Chairman, first I would like to thank Veronica, really, for her comprehensive report of the FY22 budget, and also, though, for the development of the SHIP projects in CORE. This has been a major, major undertaking, and so the reports that you're getting right now are really the first type of reports we've had on all of these projects. And it's taken a great deal of effort on her part to actually put all of this together, and it's now very comprehensive, very comprehensive. I also want to apologize at the beginning because I had not hit star six. I was just talking, and I thought everyone was hearing me, and apparently I had not unmuted myself. But I just want everyone to know on the committee that we're making arrangements also with DAS to dispose of the automobile that we have with the CPA, and we're using the DAS policy and procedures for the this disposal. We have also actually amended, signed amendments with OPM and DAS to reduce the number of state employee supports and services. And so there we will see in FY23 a reduction, a sizable reduction, if you will, in those services. As it relates to legal, I've also met with our staff, and we've implemented a few procedures and that we hope will also have an impact on those costs and legal that we can actually control ourselves. And for instance, no one is to actually be in touch with legal in consultation with legal without my express approval, number one. And number two, we're in putting in place also communications with legal, which indicate, because I've had some experience in doing this with in monitoring law firms, wherein, just for instance, we will indicate to them whenever we communicate that a conference call will only take, let's say, 10 minutes or 5 minutes or no more than 15 minutes. But we're putting in writing with them exactly what those limitations are, because their costs are generally computed basically in either 10 or 15-minute increments. Some firms also do with respect to half-hour increments, but most firms are in 15-minute increments. So we're doing some things internally basically to actually monitor a little closer to the extent that we can and control the legal costs that that we find ourselves, quite frankly, having to experience. So that is kind of the sum and substance of our report for FY22. We have a few bills that are still coming in from AECOM and KeyWit that we are looking to actually post before we actually close this out, but we will be doing that very, very shortly.
Ulysses, I'll just add, this is David. We are still finalizing kind of the best way to break out legal costs to the various subcategories that drive them, but you'll see in your packet kind of a draft breakout, which shows that approximately just greater than half of the legal expenses that you see in our current, in our recently closed or recently passed fiscal year that 225 that we were just talking about, you know, just more than half are driven by what we're calling external factors. So, you know, investigations, responses to information, FOIAs, et cetera. You know, I'm not quite ready to say that that's the definitive number, because we're still going through that, but that at least gives us a sort of order of magnitude starting point for understanding that. Any other questions or comments from anyone on anything covered by Veronica or Ulysses?
I guess, David, just one small comment, and that is the marketing business line item, which we had budgeted last year $65,000. I can't remember whether we kept it at that level or not, but I would hope that we would take advantage of those funds in marketing the new State Pier in our fiscal year 2023. I'm sure that's our intent.
It absolutely is, and I can say, you know, Andrew and I are actually both in Boston today at a wind conference doing exactly that alongside the State Department of Economic Community Development and Advanced CT. And so, you know, with, you know, in-person events coming back, I do see a great opportunity for that and know that it's something that Ulysses and Andrew are working on.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
And I'll just add to that, you know, it's not, you know, we're not in this alone, right? I did just mention that we're here with both DECD and Advanced CT. But, you know, we leverage those other resources. Advanced CT represents the state of Connecticut and to some degree the Port Authority at a lot of conferences around the country and around the world. And Andrew has recently, you know, been the driving force behind providing materials for them so that when they're at a conference in Atlantic City or Houston, as they have been in the last few weeks, that they have robust materials around around State Pier and around economic development opportunities connected to that in southeastern Connecticut and the rest of the state.
David, I would just add one comment to that is, I mean, that is fabulous news, and I would hope that somehow or other we get this kind of news out to the press, because, you know, our efforts to support the $250 million expenditure, that's very important news, and people like to hear that, and I think that we should make a big deal of you going to conferences and Andrew and Ulysses, and I think that's important.
Yeah, and I can say, just to add some anecdote, because we've been here with our colleagues from around the Northeast, you know, we remain significantly ahead of the other ports. And I want to be clear, this is not directly competition, right? This industry, in order to mobilize 30 gigawatts of wind power, offshore wind power, over the next several decades, as has been called for by the federal government and the state governments along the eastern seaboard, is going to require significant amounts of infrastructure. And so it's not an either or, it's a plus and. And yet, despite that, we encourage our colleagues in New Jersey and New York and Massachusetts and Virginia, but we are still ahead. And when I hear reports from these other port facilities and the cost that that their facilities are going to be and the monies that their, you know, states and to a lesser extent the federal government is investing, you know, not only are we not out of line with our peers, but we're earlier and we are cheaper.
Amen.
You know, yeah, it's really remarkable when you put State Pier within the broader context of port infrastructure related to the offshore wind industry. And I do hope and will certainly play whatever role I can in trying to better convey that context to folks within the state of Connecticut, because it's important, and it shows that we're not out we're not off base. We're doing what we should be doing.
And to your point, John, we're also working with UConn Avery Point. They put out what is called a Sea Grant magazine, and we are working with them right now on the publication, a fall publication, regarding the state pier and offshore and our offshore wind activities out of New London. So that's going to be another very, very large spread in terms of media support. And
you know, Ulysses, that's music to my ears. Honest to God, that's so great.
Okay, that's wanted you to know that. I also have a lunch today. I mean, it's interesting you should mention this because it's also getting our citizens up to speed too. But I have a lunch today with representatives from the New London Rotary and the Thames Club. We're going to actually put on an info session and tour of the state pier for those groups as well. And we have several other groups lined up as well. So a lot of work is being done, you know, just to kind of make sure we get people educated as to exactly what it is that we're doing here and why we're doing it. But we're working on two fronts. And like you said, it's really important for us to get the word out from the media, through the media, and we have some outlets, and Andrew has been playing a key role in the coordination of this.
This is such a successful project, the way it's been handled, all the rest of it, and it's absolutely fabulous news for all of us as board members.
You're absolutely right. Oh, by the way, to the extent that we also need to do one for the board, let me put that out there as well. We perhaps ought to also have a tour of the board here at State Pier as well. So let me just put that out because I've been thinking about it, and I'd like for us to also do an update in terms of this project for our board.
Good idea.
Any other comments or questions on the financial updates? Okay, any old business that anyone would like to bring up? Okay, any new business? I actually have one item, but anyone else have anything before I go into it? Okay, so somewhat similar to what we're just talking about, I want to raise an opportunity and just make sure we're being completely transparent, and we discuss this with the Finance Committee before we advance it. So we've been talking for some time with our partners at Ørsted, Eversource, and Gateway about a trip to Europe in order to better understand some of the port operations and the relationships between port and supply chain that we, you know, want to capitalize on here in New London. And so to that end, we are looking to go over and have several meetings with Ørsted, with an operating wind turbine installation hub similar to what we'll have in New London and unlike anything that yet exists in North America, a meeting with the barge operator who will be running the feeder barges for the first wind farm out of New London, South Fork, because the wind installation vessel Charybdis will not yet be operational. And then finally with Siemens and take a look at some of the manufacturing for the first turbines that will be coming to New London. And so this is, the trip would include, as I said, Ørsted, Eversource, Gateway, Port Authority, and some representatives from the state. It is a, very viable work trip and one for which the state could utilize what is called necessary expense, which basically means that private entities, third parties, are able to cover some of the travel costs. That said, I think it is probably more appropriate for the Port Authority to cover the costs associated with Port Authority participation. And I'll just say, you know, Ulysses and I have had a conversation about this. Given Ulysses' interim status, we didn't think it was prudent at this time for him to participate. But we did think it was appropriate for me, but I want to run that by you all with my recent reappointment. And so I guess I want to just use you all as a sounding board and be completely transparent about this, that I want to make sure you all concur that this is an appropriate trip. I want to hear your feedback, whether or not it's appropriate for me to participate as board chair. And I want to get a sense of whether or not you agree that, you know, while we could have our private partners defray the public cost by covering hotels and flights, that it would be more appropriate for CPA to cover that out of our own budget. And to give you a sense of order of magnitude, you know, it's probably in the $3,000 to $4,000 price tag per participant. So I know that's kind of a lot of information, but I'm trying to be as transparent as possible. So if anyone has thoughts, you know, please share whether, you know, you think the trip makes sense, whether it makes sense for me to participate, and whether you concur that it is better for optics for the Port Authority to cover costs, even though it could be defrayed by having Orsted Eversource Gateway contribute.
David, you know, optics are important, obviously, in terms of who's going to pay for it. But the right thing to do is exactly what you have proposed, and that is we have enough funds to pay our own way. We don't need anybody to be paying. Our way. We'll do it on our own. And I think the idea of doing a field trip is just absolutely dead nuts on. I mean, I would support it 100%. 100% what you said.
This is Paul. If I can make a quick comment. I know from the state agency's side, any out-of-state travel, we obviously for reimbursement have to get prior approval for that. So I'm not sure how the Port Authority would obtain that, but I don't think it would be the craziest thing in the world to actually speak to ethics just to make sure that I think it's a good idea to do this, but I think we really obviously have to cover every bit of this in detail, and it can't
so
hurt because ethics always says, hey, if you got a question, just give us a call.
Yep. So I can say that in anticipation of this, before I even talked with you all, I did talk with them. And, you know, to be consistent, right, conversations with them remain confidential. But I did get good guidance on what is and is not permissible. And I think the combination of the ethics guidance as well as our own travel policy, certainly reinforce that this is a viable opportunity. And I think the main outstanding question is on kind of the optics versus the letter of the rule in terms of others paying for us or not.
Hey David, this is Tom Pan. How many day trips is this?
Yeah, so it would be we're still
days,
working.
Weeks?
Yeah, less. Four. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So my opinion, having done business overseas often, is that there is no substitute for actually being in person to understand the supply chain, to understand what the partners are doing, to see the assembly hub and what it looks like, and the meetings with Siemens and the BART. I mean, I think all of that is invaluable to the project and to the state. I think I would actually prefer that we pay it directly I don't think we should have Gateway or Center Eversource funding our travel so that it would suggest some impropriety or some undue influence. And I think that the amount that you're talking about, $3,000 to $4,000 for a five-day travel to Europe and hotels and flights, is incredibly reasonable and quite inexpensive. And I would endorse both the trip and the funding mechanism 100%.
This is John. I don't want to be a naysayer, but I think from the optics point of view, first of all, I agree. Yeah, if we decide to do it, we should do it out of our own budget and not ask these other vendors to cover the costs. I'm just concerned with the optics that we've consistently have had to increase our budget, and I think we need more documentation as to the value of this and that why other alternatives couldn't be used, like Zoom meetings. I know that's not as best as an in-person, but we're a quasi-public. We've been critiqued for spending money, and is there a cheaper way of doing it to get the same results? That's just my two cents.
Yeah, I think that's... Go ahead.
I'm just thinking, you know, we were talking about that $65,000 budget we have for marketing and all the rest of it. I think this really could fit right into our budget and without having any major impact on the budget. I don't think we have to go back for more money. I think we have enough money in our budget to cover $4,000 or $5,000. I think it's going to be a little bit more than that, but you know, if it comes in at $5,000, it's a steal for 5 days. But that being said, I think that there is money in the budget, and I don't think we have to worry about the optics of having to increase our budget because of extraordinary expenses.
Yeah, to your other points, John, I mean, obviously I'm sensitive to it as well. You know, I think if there was an operating facility like this within the United States, you know, that is where we should be going rather than overseas. You know, I think the type of meetings that are meant to take place in terms of port operations make Zoom a difficulty, but we'll continue to look at options, and you know, that's why we're talking about this early, so that you know, we are as upfront as possible, and we do need to, I think, justify the value of this. And you know, part of where I kind of fall on it is Gateway, Orsted, and Eversource are going to be over there meeting, and as the owner of the facility, you know, we should be present to better understand what, if any, implications there are for us.
Yeah, and this is Tom. My sense is that I appreciate the idea of thinking about Zoom, but I think this is one of those events that there's no substitute for being in person, both in these meetings and at the facilities and the tours, and you know, the sights and sounds and the context that you can get from actually being there, I think, is it can't be replicated by Zoom participation. So I would encourage an in-person trip, but that's my view.
And Tom, I think that Zoom meetings could be as a result of an in-person meeting down the line. But you know, I think for now, I agree 100% with you that face-to-face is nothing replaces face-to-face.
Okay. Well, I appreciate all the feedback. This is exactly the kind of conversation I was looking for, and I'll keep you all apprised, as well as the rest of the board, as it develops. And then, you know, in about in less than a year, when our colleagues from, you know, Virginia and New York and Massachusetts are trying to see the same thing, we can say, hey, save your budget.
Come here.
Go overseas. Just come to New London.
We get a portion, and we get a portion of your savings.
Right.
To have them see the world class, the world's best assembly organization. Yeah.
Exactly.
Amen.
All right. Any other new business? Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So move.
By John, is there a second?
Second.
Second by Tom. Meeting is adjourned at 10:59. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Bye.